Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. Friday, May 12. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson. I'll be joined by Max Armstrong a little bit later, but it's our weekly get-together at the end of the trading week. And again, in answer to several emails, I am still in Arizona recovering from leg bypass surgery. It's taking longer than I thought, but it is healing. So one of these days I'll get back to headquarters in the Chicagoland area. But this week, we saw another week on Wall Street that was relatively quiet from the standpoint of price movement. I think the S&P 500 has moved in a trading range of about 0.4% over the past couple of weeks. And for the week ended today, the Dow dropped 0.5%. The S&P 500 lost 0.4%. On the other hand, the NASDAQ rose 0.33%. And on Monday and Tuesday, we saw record-setting intraday highs again for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. So let's take a look at that marketplace starting with today and the market action today. The stock market lower, ending the week lower. Tepid economic data weighed on banks, and concerns and worries deepened over Nordstrom and other department stores. Risk-averse sentiment also hit Wall Street this week after President Donald Trump unexpectedly fired his FBI chief. The traders, some of them at least, felt potential fallout from that could delay Trump's pro-growth goals to cut taxes and to boost spending on infrastructure. But I found it interesting to see that Wall Street reacted very little to all of the turmoil over what the Russians did to influence our election and then what the president did when he unexpectedly fired the head of the FBI. Not much of a ripple in the marketplace on Wall Street. Soft retail sales, monthly inflation data today raised concerns about slow economic growth and questions about whether the Federal Reserve could maintain its hawkish outlook for interest rates this year. Federal funds futures implied a 49% chance of two more rate hikes this year, compared with a 54% feeling shortly before the release of the data. And then there are the banks, which typically benefit from higher interest rates. They dragged on the S&P 500 and the Dow average today, and the S&P 500 financial sector fell nearly 0.5%. But another impact on Wall Street this week, the reports from department stores. Department stores continue to face a major challenge from online shopping. As a matter of fact, many shoppers go to the department store to look at the goods, and once they get a look at the goods and decide if they like them or not, they don't buy them at the store. They go back home and order them online. So as a result, some of the department store earnings reports this week were not very good. Today, JCPenney reported lower than expected comparable store sales, sent its shares down 14%. Nordstrom down 10% after weak quarterly same-store sales. Macy's fell 3%, bringing its loss to more than 19% in the past two sessions following its dismal quarterly report. The less-than-expected 0.4% month-over-month increase in April retail sales also stirred fears about the retail sector as well as the economy. And so, as I said, for the week, the Dow down 0.5%, the S&P 500 down 0.4%, while the NASDAQ rose 0.3%. GE was the top percentage loser on the Dow today, down a little more than 2% after Deutsche Bank downgraded its shares to sell from hold on GE stock. So far, though, we are getting a better-than-expected first quarter earnings season, and it's nearly complete. The S&P 500 companies, on average, now predicted by analysts to grow their second quarter earnings by 8.3%, according to Thomson Reuters. Looking at some of the individual stocks, in addition to department stores, healthcare is coming in for its area of uncertainty. And today, Anthem Incorporated said it notified Cigna Corporation that the $54 billion merger deal was off after it lost a Delaware business court ruling on Thursday, and also said it would not pay Cigna the $1.85 billion merger breakup fee. Anthem and Cigna have been in legal dispute since the Justice Department won its case to block the merger of the two health insurers on antitrust grounds. Cigna was suing in Delaware to terminate the merger, while Anthem pursued appeals of the antitrust decision. But in a statement, Anthem said, Cigna's repeated willful breaches of the merger agreement and its successful sabotage of the transaction has caused Anthem to suffer massive damages. So once again, the lawyers will probably get rich, but you have to wonder if anybody else will. So, looking ahead to next week, what's going on? Well, Walmart stores, the world's number one retailer, will report first quarter earnings on Thursday. Last month, the company said it would be cutting hundreds of corporate jobs in its international and technology businesses, along with its Sam's Club warehouse chain. And then on Tuesday, we'll get some reports to look at. U.S. Commerce Department will report on housing starts for April, likely to have risen to 1,260,000 units. That would be up slightly from March. Additionally, building permits for April are expected to come in at 1,270,000 units. Then on the same day, the Federal Reserve will release data on industrial production, which is expected to have slowed to 0.3% in April. That would be down from 0.5% the month before. Manufacturing output for April likely to pick up pace of 0.3% after dropping in March. There's going to be a big meeting in Beijing, China next week, too. Leaders from 29 countries will attend the Belt and Road Forum in Beijing on Sunday and Monday. That is a gathering to promote China's president's vision of expanding links between Asia, Africa, and Europe, underpinned by billions of dollars in infrastructure investment. Some of China's most reliable allies and partners will attend the forum, including Russian President Putin and the Pakistani Prime Minister, the Cambodian Prime Minister, and other countries will be involved. And then coming back home, Tuesday, TJX Companies, the operator of TJ Maxx and Marshall Stores, will report first quarter earnings. Home Depot, the biggest U.S. home improvement retailer, reports first quarter earnings on Tuesday. Apparel retailer Gap's efforts on revamping its logo-centric design of clothes are paying off, as the company said in the last quarter that it expected comparable sales to be flat to slightly higher in 2017. And Gap will report its first quarter results on Thursday. Along with department store chains, the teen apparel industry has been having its challenge. Luxury apparel maker Ralph Lauren will report fourth quarter earnings this week, and American Eagle Outfitters will boast earnings. John Deere and Company expected to report a decline in revenues and profit for the second quarter because of weak commodity prices and low farm income in North America. And the world's largest networking gear maker, Cisco Systems, reports its third quarter results on Wednesday. The company is expected to post its sixth straight quarterly decline in revenue. Oh, and we'll end with Campbell Soup Company. Did you know Campbell is the world's largest soup maker? Likely will continue to post declines in sales and profit due to weak demand. So another week of not quite as busy on earnings reports as it's been, but it certainly will have some interesting names that we'll be reporting next week. Well, this week we're going to introduce a first-time guest to Talk Markets. Max Armstrong is going to be visiting with John Zanker from Lafayette, Indiana, when we come back here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
John Zanker joins us this weekend from J.C. Zanker. He's the president of the firm. Lafayette, Indiana is where he hangs his shingle. You watch very closely what's going on across the heartland of America this time of year. Let's talk about wheat to begin with. We've got numbers from USDA. We have numbers from the Kansas Wheat Tour. Is this whole picture still in motion? Do we have a ways to go yet before we know what has happened with the Kansas wheat crop?
I think we do, Max. We have obviously some problems in the Western Corn Belt. In the western wheat areas with a foot of snow in both Nebraska and Kansas in some areas. And our contacts in the area said it was pretty severe. It's tough to kill wheat. Everybody's aware of that. So I think in this instance, we're probably not giving it enough attention because of that. We've also had some extremely heavy rains in parts of Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and Arkansas. And so I think we've probably done some damage to that crop as well.
The soft red winter wheat that is grown in those areas.
Exactly.
The wheat acreage, of course, is down substantially, especially in Kansas. It's down remarkably from a year ago. That makes this a little more interesting, I guess. But the world has been awash in wheat of late, and that takes a little bit of the sting out of it, I guess, as far as the millers are concerned.
Yes, we have a projected carryout right now for this marketing year of pushing $1.2 billion, and that's a little over 50% of a stocks to usage, and that's the largest number that we've seen in the past 30 years. So when you see that kind of stocks to usage ratio, nobody's showing a lot of concern at this point, and the world's awash in wheat. The funds are short 690 million bushels of soft red wheat on the board, and that's over twice the soft red production. So I think the speculators are comfortable with their position at this point, and losses from the last weekend's weather between the two crops are estimated to be 100 to 200 million bushels. And in the past, that would have been a pretty big deal. But at this point, that just means maybe we'll get this carryout down closer to 900 million after this crop's taken out.
As we look at the world and what is happening, former Soviet Union, the European Union, China, there are no problems there at the moment, are there?
We're not seeing any real big problems with wheat around the world. France has reduced their crop again, and their stocks are getting down to a fairly tight level. But as far as the major exporters, Russia has really come on. Their goal is to become the world's largest exporter of wheat. So they've been cranking out. Ukraine, Argentina, China looks to be in line for a good crop. So at this point, not too many concerns around the world that's going to push wheat.
North of the border, of course, Canada is a significant wheat producer. They have yet to seed their crop, do they not?
There's a little bit of concern up there with their spring wheat planting. It's been trailing a little bit too, as ours was, but I think they're probably moving along now as well as we are in Minnesota and the Dakotas.
The market has been sending some signals, has it not, in terms of quality needs, the cash needs, in terms of looking for protein content. The feeling is that this hard red crop coming in out of the plains may not have the protein that the millers really want.
Yeah, our contacts out there, they're concerned about that. In fact, they're concerned about the quality of the carryover stocks as well. So where are we going to get the high-quality wheat to blend with the low-quality wheat to get that product to a level that the millers are really going to want, millers and exporters? So we have some problems developing, and what we need to keep in mind, though, is that a low-quality crop doesn't necessarily mean prices are going to go higher, but what we could see is some fairly aggressive bidding for high-quality wheat coming out of the field.
I thought I heard a report the other day, something to the extent that maybe the premium was up as much as a dollar for good quality, high protein wheat.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think that's the story. If you're in the right place and you didn't get a foot of snow or 10 inches of rain, I think you'd be in a position to take advantage of some of those premiums.
There always seems to be a little bit of interest when the first combine start rolling and the first truckloads go across the scales. I would imagine that'll be watched with at least local interest this year, or certainly even if the globe isn't paying much attention to what's happening in hard wheat country.
Well, we had some, as you know, we had record yields last year, and pretty much we had record corn yield, record bean yields, record wheat yields. So we've kind of grown used to that all of a sudden. And I've been doing this for 30 some years. And about the time we get comfortable with something, it tends to change in a hurry. And you almost get the feeling that we're on the verge of something like that this growing season.
Well, that begs the question. Have we gotten to the point where we will not have record corn yields for 2017?
I think we're there. And I think one of the keys is what's going on in Minnesota and Iowa. They're picking up the pace now with their planting after a slow start. Same thing with South Dakota, North Dakota, Wisconsin. But some of those fringe states that really pounded out some great yields last year, they're off to a slower start. They can still have a very good corn yield. Minnesota, a year ago on Sunday, was 87% planted, which is just an amazing number for the first weekend of May. And they went on to a record crop of 193 bushels per acre. They're about 2 weeks behind that this year. They're doing okay right now with their planting, and they're catching up. But I'm ready to cap that yield closer to the 14 record of 171.
Does this year feel like any other year that you've watched in your 30 years of doing this? I mean, you know, we tend to think of drought years. I guess those loom large in our minds. Many of us think of 83 and 88 and 2012 for sure. But would you be able to make an analogous comparison with 2017 with any other year that comes to mind?
Well, you threw out 83, and I remember that one like it was yesterday. I was a young merchandiser in Decatur, Illinois, and we fought a little bit of wetness in the spring, and our crops weren't in particularly good shape. We had shallow root systems, and then all of a sudden it turned hot and dry in the last week of June, and it didn't stop until the middle of August. So I would be a little concerned that we go into some heat this year without an established, without a root system that we would like. 95 might be similar. We struggled to get that crop in, and then we ran into some heat and dryness that year as well.
I remember 1983 was also the payment in kind year, was it not? Weren't we doing the pick thing back in 83?
Yes, we were. So we had some farmers setting aside 50 to 100% of their corn crop. So we got caught with a lot fewer acres than we thought we were going to have, and then the yield was just absolutely decimated.
Let's talk about the replanting that is taking place. For all of the social media photographs we see and the video clips, and it's painful for a farmer to have to replant. It's expensive. It's a tough decision. It's a gut-wrenching thing to go into a field that you've planted and have to make that call about, okay, do we write this one off and go back in? There are a lot of considerations there, to be sure. How significant in the whole scheme of things in the United States corn crop is the replant that will be or is now taking place?
Well, my customers over the years have always said there's 2 to 3 days that they planted corn that they wish they didn't. And that doesn't necessarily mean they had to replant it, but it was just a case of the conditions not being ideal. And I have to think that for that corn that was planted 2 to 3 days ahead of this 8 to 10 inches of rain that we got over a fairly large portion of the Corn Belt, I would have to think that that corn's got some issues. And as I was driving up from Lafayette, Indiana, yesterday evening, there's a lot of water standing in northwest Indiana, a little bit less in northeast Illinois. But I would say it's we'll get it replanted. We'll have the type of crop that can still yield pretty well. But again, I think it's just not off to that great start that we saw a year ago, which puts that 174.6 target in question.
I know a lot of growers, of course, have tiled. There's been a lot of tile that's gone into fields, as you know, over the past, 5 to 10 years. The yield monitor has sold a lot of field tile. And because of that, you don't sometimes see the water standing as long as it has a place to go. Obviously, if the ditch is full, that's a different story, by all means. But I guess one thing that comes to mind too is I wonder about the pollination period this year. When you have a more prolonged corn planting season, it should tend, should it not, to spread out the pollination and maybe make the crop a little less vulnerable if we turn off hot and dry in July?
Yes, that's certainly true, and I think we talk about that a lot. I think that the market in general is not terribly interested in trading too much water. Even in 1993 with the floods, they didn't get too excited about that until fall.
We have rarely wiped out a crop by too much rain in the spring, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And so that makes it tough to get the market's interest in that sort of thing. But I think it does set up some problems. I'm a big, big believer in we make at least a third of that yield with good planting. And so that's a little bit questionable this year. We're just not off to we're off to the kind of start that could certainly give us 165 to 70 bushel crop. But that 174.6 record that we put in last year, that's going to be a tough one. And I think in the end, as it usually turns out, what happens in July with the heat and the dryness is going to be the biggest yield determinant.
Have we done any damage to the soybean yield yet?
I think it's a situation there again where we had 52.1 last year, which was just an incredible thing. Everything went pretty well, just almost perfect from start to finish. We had a little heat early on, but of course that doesn't typically bother the soybean plant. It might even help it. I think this year we're probably off to the kind of start where I wouldn't be comfortable predicting that kind of a yield. I think we could still do 50 bushel the acre, but I learned one thing I learned many, many years ago when my hair was quite a bit darker than it is today is if you try to predict a bean yield in May or June or even July, that soybean plant can make you look pretty silly.
John, the stocks to usage ratios, USDA tends to kind of overestimate those on soybeans, do they not? I mean, as the season goes on, when you compare May with August, hasn't that historically been the case?
It certainly was a year ago. We saw that late, the harvest issues down in Argentina, and that took a pretty good chunk out of their crop, and then some late dryness issues in Brazil as well. So we saw a sharp reduction in that carryout as we move from, I think in March we had, and even April, we were well above 400 million, and we ended up under 200 million.
But doesn't it tend to be the case quite often that USDA, especially on beans, I don't think it's as much the case on corn, is it?
It's been that way with beans because we, just about every year in the last 10, we've been a little bit surprised about how aggressive the Chinese have been as far as importing. So I think we're seeing a little bit of that now, actually. Our export pace is in line to make the estimate. But the sales are 50 million bushels over right now, the total projected yearly sales. So I think the USDA is going to reveal that with probably a tighter carryout position. But as far as from this point forward, South America's had an incredible crop, and I don't think we're going to see the increase in exports from this point forward that maybe we have been seeing.
That South American crop is still much of it hanging out there, isn't it?
Well, Brazil's done for the most part. Argentina still has some harvest going on, but
even with the marketing of it.
Oh no! Well, from the marketing, actually the Brazilians are Brazilian farmers being a pretty tight-fisted holder, which is somewhat unusual. So, with where the currencies are, where the prices are. He's been a little bit more tight-fisted, which is pushing some business our way. So at some point, those beans will hit the market, and if those beans hit the market or start getting in our back pocket in, say, August, September, and if we have a real good yield, it's really going to add to the pain, I'm afraid.
Those supplies out there in the world, the wheat, the corn, the beans available to the market, it makes it hard for the market to get excited about weather in the spring, doesn't it? I mean, you just look at all of the rain dumped into the Corn Belt, and really it's been a pretty tepid response, has it not, in the futures?
Very tepid, and something that we would have definitely seen a bigger reaction from in the last few years when you were looking at a bean carryout under 200 million, and now you're looking at closer to 440, a corn carryout of 2.3, which is largest in 10 years. So we're just and we have a fund position of minus 900 million almost in corn, and they've certainly never ever taken that kind of a short into a growing season. They tend to like to be a little long. They don't want to miss out on that big drought market. So at some point, I still expect them to maybe move towards a long position, but they need a little bit more. They need a little more push here from the weather.
I suppose Wall Street makes it a little tougher for them to do so, to act in commodities too, doesn't it, as long as we continue to see the stock market performing the way it has been?
Yes, we certainly hear about money moving between markets. Commodities in general just haven't been very good. The CRB index is down.
Oil is pretty soft.
Absolutely. And I think the oil bulls have been trying to talk that market up for a while, but we keep underestimating U.S. production, and it keeps offsetting the OPEC cuts. And I'm not sure the OPEC and Russian cuts are quite as big as what we've been promised, so which is typically the case. But, you know, if you look at the metals and copper, which is your biggest industrial metal, it's had a hard time here lately. And there's just not anything too exciting in the commodity world right now.
John, thanks for the time. It's good to talk to you.
It was great being here. Thank you, Max.
It's great to have John Zanker of J.C. Zanker of Lafayette, Indiana, join our stable of market commentators here on The Markets. We look forward to hearing from John on future programs. We'll continue with a look at closing markets in agriculture when we continue The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We have just a short time left on our program this week, and so a quick look at markets. Live cattle futures up 2% today, gaining on technical buying, and then news that China could soon boost imports of U.S. beef. That coming not only from traders and analysts, but also from Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Kansas Senator Pat Roberts, both indicating that this is a strong possibility. So that had an impact on the cattle market today. So Monday, the June cattle contract starts at $125.17 after gaining $1.17 today. And the August feeder cattle contract up limit today will start at $151.82. And the June hog contract will start at $77.95 a hundredweight after today's gains. Then turning to the grain market, corn moved a little bit higher, weather concerns and more planting delays in that picture. But Monday we start with July wheat at 432¾, May corn at 361¾, May soybeans at 9:54, starting in the trade on Monday. Well, that's our time for this week. It goes by quickly, but thank you for joining Max Armstrong and me, Orion Samuelson, on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.